Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate. Say you don't need no diamond rings, and I'll be satisfied. Tell me that you want the kind of things the money just can't buy. I don't care too much for money. Money can buy me love. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
This is Drew Tignanelli here, Money, Riches, and Wealth, co-host Graham Ewing. Graham, how you doing?
Great to be here. Doing great.
Hey, we got a great show tonight. We're with Mitch Anthony, and we're talking about the new retirementality. And Mitch Anthony is the founder and president of MitchAnthony.com, a consulting firm that works with financial services organizations to promote transparency between advisors and their clients. He's been many different news sources and publications and books that he's written and so forth. And so it's going to be great to hear his perspective on retirement. And Mitch, I'm just going to wrap the book up in a one simple sentence. You say a little coffee in the morning, a little wine at night, and everything else works out well.
You know how to get me going, don't you?
I thought that was great. I mean, I figured, hey, I'm finished reading this book, you know, a little coffee in the morning, a little wine at night. Now,
when we talk to people about retirement, I often speak to consumer audiences, and I'll say, when I say the term retirement planning, what's the first thing that comes to your mind? And they say money.
Yep.
And then I tell them about the executive who just retired and said to me, what am I supposed to do now, hug my checkbook?
Right, I hear you.
What am I going to do with the rest of my life? I'm bored out. You know, within weeks, he was bored out of his skull.
Well, you say this in your book, and you make a very bold statement. You say, political and social reasons determined retirement 100 years ago, and it has no part in today's society. I sort of paraphrased what you said, but that's basically the gist of it. Why do you make such a bold statement like that?
Well, retirement's not a natural part of the life course, and if it was, we'd have incidents of it, and we'd have stories about it going back hundreds and thousands of years, but we don't. The actual institution as we know it today started about 1885 in industrialized Germany, and it was really sort of a government disability program for workers who'd gotten too old to do their job well.
Uh-huh.
And Otto von Bismarck, who was chancellor at the time, determined that if you were 70 years old, you could get this stipend. And by the way, a couple numbers I love to share with audiences are these. One, von Bismarck himself was exempted from it. He was 76 years old, so apparently he was grandfathered in at the time. And the other number that's interesting is that the average German worker back then lived to be 46. So think about this.
Really?
The retirement age was placed 24 years past the age of life expectancy. So if we use the same algorithm here, we're going to have to set retirement age here in America at 109.
Right. Well, that's sort of same with Social Security, right? 65 was the retirement date, full retirement. Most people died at 63 or so.
That's exactly right. And in 1937, they ratcheted the eligibility back to 62. And if you think about it, even with the Social Security and everything else, they were looking at retirement as a 1 or 2 year journey, not a 35-year journey.
Right.
And speaking of that journey, there's a great quote in your book by Michael Stein. It says, I have come to the conclusion that more retirements will fail for non-financial reasons than for financial reasons. So on that journey, what are these non-financial reasons that are causing people to fail?
Well, there are many, many reasons, and I'll try to capsulize here given the time that we have. But the first problem that people have going into retirement is they think everything will take care of itself, and it won't. And so more people retire from something than they do to something. And the people that retire from something, you know, I don't have to punch that clock anymore. I'm done with that boss, you know, that sort of thing. I'm leaving something, mm-hmm. but have nothing in front of them. They're in trouble. They're going to be in trouble. And there's an interesting study that was done about how much time people take to plan a retirement versus how much time they plan a 2-week vacation. And they actually spend more time on the 2-week vacation.
Right. You know,
right? And they just think that this, like you said at the beginning, I have my cup of coffee in the morning, my glass of wine at night, and everything else will just take care of itself. Well, it doesn't.
That's true.
And that's one of the reasons. Another reason that a lot of retirements fail is because we, and I make a big point of this in my book, that we tend to underestimate the value of work in our culture. And, you know, because of the industrial age, work became a four-letter word, kind of became a dirty word, because people were treated like they're parts of machinery. But the fact of the matter is, we're actually living in an age I would call a renaissance age of work, where a lot of people are doing work that they enjoy, or there's huge aspects of their work that they love to do, and it's awfully hard for them to walk away from. So I've actually created an assessment called the Retirement Worksheet that helps people go through this and analyze, what do I get out of my work that I really enjoy, both not just economically, but the lifestyle benefits of work. What's, you know, for example, the mental stimulation or the social stimulation, working with others or working on a team or seeing a project to the end, or there's all kinds of things that people get meaningful aspects out of their work. We tend to underestimate that in our culture. And as a result, what happens is people retire, and all of a sudden they're not working anymore, and they thought that's what they wanted, but they're missing those aspects of their life. So for example, that socialization aspect. I mean, I remember talking on another radio show years ago with a guy whose mother had retired from the piano store, the family piano store, at 65 years of age. And the doctor called him 6 months later and said, you better get your mom back to work, or she's not going to live out the year.
Right.
Because
right.
She would greet all the customers, and she just loved meeting with the people. And she went into a physical and psychological spiral when she retired. And by the way, that the guy that was telling me this story on his radio program said, Mom's 86 today, and she's already worked 3 hours.
Wow. That's fantastic. Uh-huh. So, you know, I don't have a lot of time left in this first segment, but you're basically talking about financial independence is important, not as much quote-unquote retirement as it's come to be known as.
Yeah, I find that much more motivating, Drew, is having enough money to do what I want at the pace I choose with the people I choose. That's independence, and that's the best thing money can buy you, is the ability to do what you want with your time.
Right, yep. Perfect, Mitch. And we got to take a pause with traffic. We're going to be right back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. This is Drew Tignanelli, president of the Financial Consulate and host of Money, Riches, and Wealth. So often a radio listener calls me saying, I've been listening to you for years and have been meaning to call. When they come in for their comprehensive financial physical, they say, I wish I had done this years ago. If you've been meaning to call and meet with us, then do not wait. Call now to learn more about our trademark financial physical. The financial physical is designed to be a comprehensive second opinion analyzing all your goals and objectives. Are you maximizing tax efficiencies? Will you be able to maintain your lifestyle in retirement? Is your portfolio properly allocated? Are just a few of the many parts of the physical. The best part of our service is you get to see the final product before you decide if you want to pay for it. We do this to assure you we are not selling product, and we guarantee the physical to be truly beneficial. Do not wait any longer. Call 410-823-7283. That's 410-823-SAFE, or visit us online at financialphysical.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And this is Drew Tignanelli, Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're with Mitch Anthony, the new retirementality, here with my co-host Graham Ewing. And Mitch, one of the things that I've always been concerned about is the financial services industry presses this, what I consider an economic bias, that everybody needs, you know, $2-4 million in order to be successful in retirement. There's obviously an economic bias on their part to say that. Do you think that that's a true statement, that everyone needs that kind of money?
No, I don't believe that. And there are plenty of people that can prove that point out. But the truth of the matter still is this, kind of the point we left on our last segment, was that the best thing money can buy you is the freedom to do what you want with your time.
Right.
So we want to get to that place where we have financial autonomy, where we're calling the shots, where we're not having to kill ourselves to collect a check. But at the same time, there's two ways of looking at this. There's how much you spend, and then there's how much you have saved, right?
Right.
And people have the options of reducing their spending. So, that's where good financial advice comes into play. Not just investment advice, but spending and cash flow and risk management and, retirement distribution plans. Good financial advice is worth an awful lot, and I think people that find a good advisor do much better in retirement, period.
Well, I think you're exactly right. Investments is a very important piece to the puzzle, but just one piece. And beyond the financial side of things, you talk about the non-financial things, sometimes the life advice, the life planning. And you talked earlier about mental stimulation and social stimulation. And in your book, you talk about the vitamin C's of successful aging. What are those five vitamin C's?
Well, the last 40 to 50 years of gerontological studies have turned up some basic aspects of life that you have to pay attention to as you age, and they all just happen to start with the letter C, so I couldn't help myself. I had to call them the vitamin C's of successful aging.
My mom
and
always tells
one of
me
the first ones
C.
is challenge, having challenge in your life. And by the way, I often like to ask people, what do you think is your biggest risk in retirement? And because they've been trained to think this way, they say, well, economic risk, and that's not the answer. The biggest risk we have in retirement is actually cognitive risk. There was a study that came out of the UK just last year that showed in your first year of retirement, you can look forward to a 30% decline in short-term memory. Now, how many people have that on their bucket list, right?
Right.
Yeah. And the reason for it is our brain is an organ, and it's a use-it-or-lose-it proposition. And when we stop using our brain, and as a matter of fact, this is a study that came out of the Dementia and Alzheimer's Institute. The number one behavioral or lifestyle factor, we're not talking genetics now, we're just talking about what can you do to control your situation and your state. The number one factor was maintaining intellectual challenge in your life.
Wow.
Okay? That means you got to have, and I'm not just talking about doing crossword puzzles here, right? You got to have real life puzzles. You got to have real life challenges. Things that cause you and force you to think. And literally, I've interviewed hundreds and hundreds of people. My book is now in its fifth edition, so I spend a lot of time talking with people about this. And I've received a lot of, personal feedback from people saying, yeah, I could feel it happening to me within weeks, right?
Right.
The processes were slowing down. Or as one fellow told me who was in a sales career, he said, I was always lucid and articulate. And he said, within weeks, I couldn't string a sentence together.
You know,
right?
You had another quote in here by Senator Green. He said, when you get old, you should give things up. That's what everyone tells you. But you get old because you give things up.
That's exactly right. And so this challenge piece, by the way, is not just about cognitive challenge. It's also about physical challenge, right? Maintaining
right.
physical challenge in your life. And there's this thing called the corporeal cognitive spark. We're pushing your body to do things, maybe even though it hurts. It's kind of like the old George Burns line. He said, I'm at the age now where if it doesn't hurt, it doesn't work. But you've got to push yourself, and that's why you see more and more people in the gym and in the health clubs in their 80s and even 90s today, because they've begun to understand that physical push actually kickstarts your brain function.
Right.
Right. There's a relationship between those two things. I remember having this conversation with a guy at my gym. I teach basketball, and he's 80 years old, and I see him down there every day shooting buckets. And I asked him, I said, how come you're the only guy your age I ever see shooting baskets? He said, because everybody else found their excuse.
That is
right?
True.
My wrist hurts, my arm right. hurts, my elbow hurts. Of course something's going to hurt, but the problem is if you don't use these things, they atrophy and they get worse, and then they don't work at all.
That is true.
So that's a big issue. That's a big vitamin C of successful aging. Another one is curiosity. Just always keeping yourself wanting to learn more. And when you stop learning, you stop growing, and you literally stop living. That's why we enjoy little children so much, because they just have this insatiable curiosity about everything, and it's just fun to watch them discover. But, and by the way, this has nothing to do with age. This is an interesting thing. I'm calling it a vitamin C of successful aging, but the fact of the matter is we know people who are 40 years old and have no curiosity.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And then we know people who are 90 and are filled with curiosity. So a question I often like to ask people is, how many of you know somebody who's 85 and acts like they're 45? And they all say, yes, I know that person.
Right.
And then I'll say, well, how many of you know somebody who's 40 and acts like they're 90? And they say, yeah, I know that person too. And what we're acknowledging here is that there's a difference between age and old.
Yeah.
Age has nothing to do with old. And this is the bias that's in our society. People assume because you have years that you're old. That's not true. That your age does not make you old. It's your attitude that makes you old. And so age is basically a time marker, right? It's a
right.
time factor. It's based on time. But old is an attitudinal factor.
Well, your five C's goes across the board for everyone. Everyone, I don't care what age you are, should be attentive to these five C's.
Yeah, yeah. And so this thing about being curious is really important as we age, though. It becomes more important that we don't lose that curiosity. And I learned that lesson talking to a professor who at the time was 77 years old, and he taught upper atmospheric physics at the University of Washington. And I asked him, I said, why are you still teaching? I teach at university, too, and I know a lot of universities, they try to push people out when they reach a certain age. I said, why are you still teaching? He said, because there's so much left to learn about upper atmospheric physics. You know, he was just enthralled with the topic, and I thought, that's beautiful, right, to live your whole life that way, to just have such curiosity. A couple of the other vitamin C's are
well,
creativity.
Before you go on with that,
yeah.
You know, it's, you know, like when you're on an airplane, it's always that if you ask questions, you'll start a great conversation because people prefer to try to answer questions than to actually learn something about somebody else.
Yeah, that's right. And guess what? The naturally curious always do ask questions.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They want to know more, right?
Yep.
And I personally, if you think about it, the greatest people in every realm, every sector of life, that have, and anyone who's ever done anything great, you can trace it back to this one factor. They're a very curious person.
So the other two, creativity, charitable.
Yeah, creativity has to do with doing things where you're, you know, it could be carving wood ducks, it could be painting pictures, it could be doing something with music or writing poetry, some creative outlet. I learned this from an artist who was in her 90s in Canada, and she said, when you're an artist, she said, you never see the same thing twice. She said, as I'm looking out the seascape, I notice the subtle shifts and nuances that keeps my eyes and my ears and my senses sharp. I thought that was a really beautiful insight. And the charitable thing has to do with living for others and doing things for others and knowing that you have value. A lot of people give up on life because they feel like their life doesn't matter anymore after they retire. And I'll bet your listeners know somebody that fits that description who suddenly woke up one day. You know, you could wake up on day 43 of retirement and feel like there's no reason to get out of bed.
Right.
Like your life is aimless now. You have no purpose. Well, when you get involved in charitable activities, I got a letter just about a month ago from a guy who had retired at 55 years of age because that's what the world said you ought to do, right? And he was so proud of himself. And he was a year into his retirement, and he was miserable. And this is a guy who spent his winters in the Cayman Islands and his summers in a resort area. And he had the life of Riley, as most people from the outside would describe it. And he stopped in to see his financial advisor for the one-year review, and his advisor said, how's retirement going for you? And he said he didn't even know where it came from. He said suddenly tears started going down his cheeks, and he said, I'm lost.
And on that note, there's a great quote in the book, strive not to be of success, but to be of value.
Yep.
Albert Einstein.
That's Albert Einstein. Great quote. We're going to go to traffic. We'll be right back. Money, Rich, and Wealth.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And this is Drew Tignanelli back with Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're here with Mitch Anthony, the new retire mentality. And Graham Ewing is here with me. And Mitch, when people go to retire, there's three different classifications of a retiree. They're the I'm done. There's the I have to. They're telling me I have to. And they're the I'm inspired. And all three have, you know, different you know, there's differences between them, especially the I'm done one, because I meet those a lot where they're just totally burned out. They've had a bad employer for years. They've burned them out, and they just have to go.
They'll say, I want to retire yesterday.
They always say that, you know, no matter how old they are, I wished I could have retired yesterday, you know?
Always.
So how do you deal with them?
Well, I mean, you talk about civic employees. I mean, they often fall into that category, don't they?
Yeah, right? So absolutely.
Right, and they've had it with the bureaucracy, the administration, the dealing with upset people all the time, and you can't blame them. The thing I warn them about is that they may go through a decompression period where, man, is it good to be away from that, right? If you're doing something every day that's wearing you out, that's enervating you, not energizing you, you do need a change. But the problem is, see, this is why we need to change the conversation around work when people are younger, because why would we take a job we hate, do it for 40 years in hopes of someday being able to buy an RV? Right? It's like, I often tell people, and I've had these conversations with, say, a lawyer in his 40s, and he's like, well, I just got to grind it out 20 more years. And I'll look the guy in the eye and I'll say, I don't know if anybody ever told you this, but this isn't a dress rehearsal.
Right.
This is actually your real life you're living right now. You don't get to push a button like on the video game and get a new life.
Right.
And so I often, when I'm talking to young people, I start this conversation. I say to them, people always tell you, study the thing you're good at. And I tell them just the opposite. I say, don't study the thing you're good at. Study the thing you're most curious about.
Right. That's a good one. That's a great
point. We always get an odd look
because
when we say we're curious.
Let me tell you, I'm really good at math. I'm really quick with numbers. They bore the snot out of me.
How about
taxes? Well, that's not a formula for satisfaction in life. Right? It's one thing to be good at something. It's another thing to really be enthralled with it and really be intrigued by it. But so those people that say, I'm done, I never disagree with them. They know they're done. But what are you going to do with your time? You know, for example, I've got a son who works in law enforcement in Alaska. He's going to be 53 years old when he's eligible for a pension. I know him. He's not going to be able to sit still. So he's already at 30-some years old thinking ahead and thinking, what am I going to do to with my time and with my energy and with my skills and abilities because he'll probably get to the point, as people do in law enforcement, where they're like, I've had enough of this.
Well, that's one of the beauty of government work is that you do get a nice pension at the end that you can easily sit back and plot, well, what am I going to do once I get this pension? What am I going to do?
Yeah,
am I going to start
military,
a second career?
Same situation.
Yeah.
And
law
so that's why in my book, you know, a lot of people that are reading my book are in their 40s and early 50s because they're realizing I need to plan the rest of my life here. Just having the money doesn't solve life.
Now you didn't have this in the book, Mitch, but what about this FIRE movement, you know?
Yeah. So
financial
so the whole FIRE
independence
movement is that I'm gonna
early.
Live this life close to the bone for a long, long time. Right, living. I'm gonna live in bare necessities, so I can get enough money to kick back and just do what I want with the rest of my life.
Is that at like 45 years of age?
Yeah, at 45 years of age. But again, these are people who have not examined the aspects of work that actually fulfill them.
Right.
So they're buying into the leisure lie, and the reason I call it the leisure lie is because this is what all retirement sales pitches have been built around. When you see a retirement brochure, it's got a beach on it, it's got a golf course, you know what I mean? It's always about you're just going to have a fishing pole in your hand and life's going to be great. Well, the studies are in on that, and what they found is that there's a law of diminishing return around leisure, that when all you have to do is play, it gets boring and it gets redundant and it gets mundane. And I live in Rochester, Minnesota, home of the Mayo Clinic, and I actually had a gerontological researcher here tell me this. He said, Mitch, I can show you that a life of total ease is two steps removed from a life of total disease.
Well, Mitch, you don't have to live in Minnesota, so obviously you do that for a purpose because that keeps you alive up there.
Well, you know what? I'm not going to be a snowbird because I want to be the tough guy.
That's the coldest place I've ever been in my lifetime. I went ice fishing up there once, and I thought, why would anybody do this? You know?
Well, I think ice fishing is just an excuse for hard liquor. But
And I don't even drink it, so it was really a bad excuse.
No, we're tough up here, and I suppose if I didn't get – so many opportunities to go speak in the South in the winter, I might think about getting a place for at least 3 months a year. But
maybe our Ravens will meet your Vikings in the Super Bowl. That would be fun.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think you guys got a good chance of winning it this year.
Well, you know, we'll see. We got to go a couple more games before we get there. Anyway, what's that Warren Buffett? That goes perfect for this right now.
Yeah,
you know?
The other quote in there I really liked: "Money won't make you happy, but neither will poverty." Warren Buffett says that, and then, you know, a lot of people talk about how money won't make you happy, but just poverty, as he says, poverty doesn't either. So what's the balance?
Yeah, you know, and it was also Warren Buffett who said, the only things that make you happy in life are having your health and having people that love you.
Yeah. Yep.
And money won't buy either one. But, you know, I always like to balance quotes on how little you need money from billionaires with quotes from the common man, and that the one you just quoted is a good one, right? Poverty won't make you happy either.
That's true.
I've been motivated. I remember years ago, I love to play golf. And isn't that sort of the cliche of what you're going to do when you retire? You're going to play golf. And I remember one day turning to my wife on the number 7 fairway and saying to her, I'm using all my energy, all my creativity, all my resourcefulness for this game. And it just doesn't seem right. As much as I love the game, if this is all I had to do, I think it would drive me insane.
Well, the good news is you can only play golf 3 weeks a year in Minnesota.
Yeah, but here's the deal. Here's the interesting thing about the and I'm back on this leisure lie thing.
Right.
Is that when all you have to do is play, the play isn't as fun anymore.
Yeah.
It's the fact that this is what one retiree told me 6 months into his retirement. He said, "No one told me that the reason my golf was fun was it was because I wasn't working."
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. It was the catharsis from my work. Now, he said, I don't have any work, so my golf has become my work. And he said, and I'm 4 over after 2 holes, and I've ruined my day at work. Right?
Yep.
So it places the emphasis in the wrong place. So, you know, I don't want to kill this point, but I want to make it really clear that if you think you're going to retire and do nothing but play, you better think again.
Yeah, you know, my brother retired from the Federal Reserve at 57 years of age, and he loves to play golf, and he plays a lot of golf and so forth. And he did, you know, he part-time was a professor teaching accounting a few days a week at the most. But you know what? He got to the point where he actually went to the PGA school to become a referee for golf, and now he goes around to colleges and referees college golf matches.
That's a great anecdote.
Yeah, yeah. And he loves it. And I thought that was such a great decision on his part, you know?
Yeah, and he's getting a little paycheck from that.
Yeah,
right?
And he gets to see the young talent around, and he gets to watch them play, and he loves that too, you know? So it was just a great decision on his part, you know, to take it and do something with something he's passionate about. You
know? That anecdote, thanks for sharing that, because that's a perfect example of what I'm talking about in the book. Find something that interests you. Find something that intrigues you, something that keeps you sharp, and if there's a paycheck that comes with it, all the better.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, there's lots of great things. We're almost out of time for this segment. But when we come back, I want to go into that whole concept that you laid out in the purpose-driven retirement, pages 98 and 99, where you can actually kind of do an assessment. That's part of the beauty of your book, Mitch, is that you give lots of little worksheets in here for people to learn about how to make the most out of their retirement. That's good. Where we're going when we come back, okay, buddy?
Sounds good.
All right. This is Money, Rich, and Wealth. Take it away, traffic. This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, and president of the Financial Consulate. Are you looking for a professional financial advisor that you can trust and help you through all stages of life? Having a team of comprehensive personal financial advisors and CPAs gives us the ability to help you prepare your tax return, strategize to help you minimize tax liability, help you visualize and reach your retirement goals, and help guide you in every other facet of personal financial planning. We demonstrate these abilities every Wednesday night on our radio show, Money, Riches, and Wealth. Have you been wanting a second opinion? Then consider our trademark service, the Financial Physical. We guarantee if you don't come away from your Financial Physical with a sense of immense value, then there will be absolutely no charge. Call 410-823-7283 to speak with me and the team of comprehensive personal financial advisors and CPAs. That is 410-823-SAVE, or go online to financialphysical.com. That's financialphysical.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
This is Drew Tignanelli here, Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're talking with Mitch Anthony in his book, The New Retirementality. That's a difficult word to say sometimes, you know, Graham? And we're my co-host, Graham Ewing. I stumble over it every time I say it. New Retirementality, but I understand the point. It's a great point. And Mitch, I did your test. I took the test,
okay.
Page 98 to 99. I had 14 for play,
okay.
23 for connect, 23 for renew, and work was 39.
Wow.
39.
Well, let me put this into context. By the way, I'm glad we had a little break there because I had to run and find the version of the book you're looking at. You're looking at the fourth edition.
Okay, well, I'm behind the time usually.
Well, no. I wanted to tell you, this is interesting timing for this interview because 1 week ago, the fifth edition just came out.
Oh,
the market.
Wow, that's fantastic.
And that all makes me really happy because when I wrote the first edition, they accused me of losing my mind. So apparently everyone's lost theirs as well.
I hear you.
But okay, let me give you the genesis of it's called the My Retirementality Profile that you're talking about, Drew.
Okay.
And basically, this is kind of like a Myers-Briggs meets retirement. It's a personality test. How is my DNA going to play itself out in retirement? And the reason I developed this profile is because of what I call the couple's conundrum. And I know you guys have seen this a lot, right, Graham and Drew, where couples retire and they think they both have the same plan for retirement and they discover early on that they don't.
Oh, yeah.
And the divorce rate actually spikes in the first 18 months of retirement, which saddens me. And I remember an advisor from out in New Jersey who wrote me one day and said, I give your book out to couples because he said it's so sad for me to help them build this nest egg for 30 years and then they split up within a year of retiring because they weren't prepared for what was going to happen.
Right.
And so this is like a DNA, personality DNA test that tells you how you're wired. And so basically, Drew, that was you talking, wasn't it, about the 39-hour work?
Yeah.
So you're a guy who's probably going to keep working your life as long as you possibly can, and as long as you know you're bringing value, you're going to want to keep doing that to a degree. And, you know, if your significant other is wanting to say, hey, let's just drop all the work and travel the world or go to bridge tournaments, you're going to be like, wait a minute here, you know?
Yeah, she knows very well who I am and what I'm going to do, you know?
Right. So we found that it helped that conversation. It helped people to see where they have points in common and where they don't have points in common. And at the end of the day, you know, you guys brought this up earlier. There's a broad spectrum of people out there. There are the people that can't retire soon enough, but then that's on one end of the spectrum. And then on the far other end are people that are going to work till the day they die.
Right.
And then there's people all in between there. And so here's what I challenge people to do, and I think this is really important. Find your personal balance between vacation and vocation.
Right.
Find your balance. Everyone's wired differently. And I can play for a long time, but at some point I just wake up and go, you know what, I got to go do something that matters.
Right.
You know, I'm one of those guys, I don't know about you guys, but you take me on one of those Caribbean vacations, about day five, I'm scratching my head.
Day one. I'm serious.
What do you call a cruise, Jerome?
I call a cruise a floating prison, you know. I see no.
Oh, that's good stuff.
No, yeah. I go on a nice trip with my wife every year, at least one or two, and then I go with my children and grandchildren on a great fishing trip once a year, and a good golf trip with my wife and a few other friends and stuff like that. But you know, I work and I play. You know, I like to have a nice little balance, but I prefer working.
Yeah, and so that's the whole point. Is everyone? You can't have somebody else telling you how to do that. You got to find it yourself.
Right.
And that's what I tell people to do. Retirement's not a one-and-done act. Retirement's an experiment. And so if you're going to enter into this stage called retirement, that's why this little personality profile helps. See how you're wired. Try some things out. We found through studies that it takes people about 3 to 4 attempts at retirement to get it right.
Yeah.
So don't expect to have everything figured out or get everything figured out right away. Just pay attention to how you're personally wired.
So, you know, I do a lot of retirement seminars, Mitch, and I start the seminar out on one section. I talk about a couple that came to see me to do financial planning, and we usually start off with, well, what are your goals? What are you trying to accomplish? And the husband starts talking. He says, we're going to retire in about 6 months, and then we're going to sell our house, and we're going to move to Florida in about a year or so. And, you know, he's going on, and as he's going on, the wife's eyes are getting bigger and bigger. It's the first time she ever heard their goals. I mean, it was almost hysterical, but I was sad at the same time, and I had to stop them and say, okay, we got to get together on the same page, you know.
Yeah.
She can't hear this for the first time right now, you know, and so forth. So,
well, this is why I've created a process called retirement coaching that advisors around the world are using to help people understand there's two big questions that need to get answered here before you retire. One is, how are you going to spend your time? Two, how are we going to pay for it?
Right.
Well, you can't answer how are we going to pay for it till we know how you're going to spend your time. And what I like to tell consumer audiences is everyone I've ever met has the same amount to spend in retirement, 168 hours a week.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
What are you going to do with that 168 hours? I put this little sheet in front of them called My Ideal Week in Retirement. It's got morning, afternoon, evening, Sunday through Monday, right? Or Monday through Sunday, 21 blocks of time. And they'll say, oh, I'm going to golf. I say, fill in your tee times. They fill in their tee times. They're looking at 70% white space. They don't know what they're going to do.
And right? you say in your book, don't go it alone. You've got chapter 16, don't go it alone. And I think that's part of it, right? Where people might, like you said earlier, they take more time to plan their vacation, a two-week vacation, than they do their retirement. It helps when you have someone else involved.
Well, and guess what? The retirement conversation is happening in the financial advisor, financial planner's office. And so in my opinion, you guys are the ones that need to be doing this coaching with your clients. It's just saying, okay, here's what we've seen. We've helped a lot of people retire. We've seen some people retire well. We've seen others retire not so well. So we want to just kind of coach you on the lifestyle aspects before we work on the mathematical aspects.
Right.
And I always like to put it to people this way. Here's what you need to retire well. Enough purpose to wake up in the morning and enough money to sleep at night.
There you go. And Mitch, I found you the first time I heard you talk was at a NAPFA conference 4 years ago, which is, as you know, the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors. And the quote that you have in here, I feel like describes the entire association perfectly, is by Dr. William Mayo, "The best interest of the patient is the only interest that matters." So it's important you find an advisor that really believes that.
That's right. I mean, this is a big thing in life, right? This is a big transition in life. And the last thing you need is somebody who's trying to exploit this transition you're going through to make a commission on such and such, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, and that's, I love NAPFA. I love the association. I love the whole everyone abiding by the fiduciary rule, which basically, why would you do this business for any other reason, right?
Right. Right.
It's to help people out. And, you know, that quote you just quoted is from William Mayo, who founded the Mayo Clinic, which to this day is still ranked the number one medical clinic in all the world. It's right in my backyard. And they abide by that. They really do care about the patient and their well-being and what's best for them. And what's best for all our listeners is to have someone sit down with them and help them chart out a course for your life. What are you going to do in the next 30-some years? And then chart out how are we financially going to manage this course.
Right. Mitch, when I also do retirement seminars, another thing that is important to me to start the seminar off with is the concept that money is not powerful. Money is a great neutral tool, but relationships are powerful. And you have a quote here. It says, "Jesus told us more about money than heaven, maybe because he understood if money is not properly understood, it can turn our lives into a living hell." I thought that was a great quote that you had in there.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that. And I appreciate the idea that money is a tool. I like to put it this way. Money is a utility.
Right.
That's all it is. It's like the sail on the boat. It's a utility that we skillfully manage in order to navigate.
Right.
It's not the objective. It's not the shore we're sailing toward. It's not the sea we sail upon. It's not even the boat upon which we sail. It's a utility that we skillfully manage
right.
to help us get where we want to go. And
Mitch,
when money gets out of that context, it gets unhealthy.
Right.
And that's why I teach something called Return on Life. And
right.
that is, I want to get the best life possible with the money I have.
I got to wrap it up there, Mitch. I want to thank you.
You are most welcome. I appreciate the conversation.